Hello, everyone. I'm Nate Truex.
And I'm Brian McDowell.
And welcome to Reptile Ramblings, first episode of our little new mini-series. We're just nerd about reptiles for a set amount of time to be determined. So,
yep. You are going to be along with us for the journey just as much as we are in for the journey as we ramble on about all things fauna or such.
Herpetofauna, herpetoculture, herping, whatever you want, whatever is our particular interest that particular episode. So, all right,
yeah,
Brian.
I was going to say, touching on the herpetoculture side, you know, we have Kalubrifest. And then if you don't know what Kalubrifest is, you know, Nate, you know, take it away. What's your little synopsis on that?
Yeah, so Kalubrifest is organized by Zach Loffman and Clint Bartley, the two hosts of the Kluber and Kluberoid Exchange Radio. No, it's just Kluber and Kluberoid Radio. But it's going to be in Indianapolis last weekend of September. Find it online, the Show Me Reptiles website. Both me and Brian will be going there. So if you want to meet us there, just go there and stalk us, I guess.
Yes. Well, you know, you have a pretty distinctive voice, Nate, so I'm sure people will pick you out from the crowd. And then, you know, maybe if we have time, we will probably do some herping in around Indianapolis. You know,
I would like to get my life for Kirtland's though.
Yes, we did talk about this. Kirtland's seem to be somewhat common around the area. Obviously, they're a very tough snake to find just because of their lifestyle. Being pretty secretive and aquatic makes for a very difficult snake to find, but I am hopeful we'll at least turn up something, some frogs, some lizards. I don't know about salamanders. I didn't check. I don't know.
Yeah, double check that as well. But so, Brian, you want to let people know more about you?
No, I'm very secretive.
That's why I'm doing a public podcast, so I keep all my secrets.
You wrote me into this. No, I mean,
I have a family. This is the only reason I'm doing it.
Family is everything, right? Vin Diesel. Yeah. Same along the lines with you is that, you know, I love herps. You know, I don't have as an extensive collection as you, and I know you don't have too much of a collection yourself, but. You know, ever since I was little, and you know, it's a very, very similar story to a lot of folks out there. I'd love dinosaurs. I thought I was going to be a paleontologist. As I got older, I realized that sort of science isn't necessarily my tune. And also, dinosaurs are dead, technically, if you don't include the birds. And you know, they're never going to come back. I mean, it's a fall from grace to be, you know, like a T-Rex to be a turkey. It's like, well, I want something
a bit
more.
We don't even have the forest rackets anymore, so.
No, not even them. We were close to still having them, but I was like, well, let's get something that's kind of close. And like the other reptiles, the other herps, at least they're scaly and cool. And cool. Birds are cool too, folks. Birds are cool, but I'm definitely.
And they're government drones, so.
A scaly guy. Hey, that is true. Hawks are watching. But, you know, and then, you know, with herping really opened the gateway for me in terms of liking this kind of stuff. I would imagine you're probably along the same vein as you've kind of kept up with the paleontological discussions as of late.
I try.
Yeah, I mean, you had that recent episode with what's his face from Land of Oz. That was pretty.
Dr. Steve Salisbury.
Salisbury, yes. Yeah, that was really neat to talk more on the Neosuchians and how diverse they were.
Neosuchians.
I wish you touched a bit more. Well, I mean, they're still a part of that clade, right? Neosuchia or whatever, but. You know, I really wish you guys talked a little bit more on Quincana because I was under the impression that, like, at least one species got, you know, megalania size. I was still confused on that.
Yeah, I was like I was talking to him and he said, it's like, eh, it's probably overestimated. It's probably more like a large smooth front Cayman size. So.
That is disappointing. I was like, wow, I thought Australia had like two big, you know, terrestrial, you know, land reptiles, but it's just one.
So they just had a souped up Komodo dragon and a souped up Paleosuchus.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair though, like a long legged, you know, dog size or, you know, terrestrial size croc, still pretty cool. It would have been cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah. So a little bit about me if you're first starting the podcast, which I mean, I'm going to be posting it to my main podcast page. So I don't know how you wouldn't know me, but I digress. Nate, I've been nerding about reptiles ever since I was a little kid. Funny story of my childhood. When I was a really little child, I remember distinctly thinking that dinosaurs and reptiles are two completely separate things, which, I mean, if you separate archosaurs off from lepidosaurs, you could kind of make that argument, I guess. But as a little kid at the time, I thought, no, dinosaurs are completely separate. Then God wiped them out so that people could actually survive on Earth and made everything else after that. And my dad, of all people, had to sit me down one day. It's like, no, Nate, dinosaurs are reptiles. And I remember being actually kind of distraught about that. So, my whole world just got collapsed like that. I mean, well, it's more of, like it my whole entire worldview just got.
They still live through, like, but, you know, your little house gecko or a gnoll.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was the kid that nerded out about dinosaurs and reptiles. However, I'm also the rare exception where that wasn't exactly the thing that got me into reptiles, of all things. So, but yeah, I went to Bob Jones for 2 years, 2.5 years, did some work at Dr. Chris Carmichael's herbarium there. Then I did a couple internships at a couple gator parks down in East Texas, including Crocodile Encounter, which if you know me, you know I like to talk about Crocodile Encounter every chance I get. And nowadays, I just keep my own personal collection up here in Ohio with a few herps, and I do podcasting.
Podcast well, dude. Podcast well. I'm piggybacking off of that, you know, with Chris Dieter of Croc Encounters. I know he did a book, I think, back in the 90s or early 2000s on crocs in captivity, but I'm like, it'd be really nice to have like a souped up revised version of that or something for like now, if that's in the works.
You're kind of actually in luck. He's been in the process of writing like a 300-page long book about it. So,
oh, fantastic. Nile Crocs, here I come.
And yeah. And also, I know for a fact that at least one picture from your homeboy is going to be in that book. So,
well, of you or a pic you took of some of his Crocs?
A photo I took.
Good, man. That's decent status to have anything associated with you in the book. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. I remember writing a letter into Reptiles magazine back in like 2011, 2012, maybe something like that. And I was kind of an ignorant kid at the time who had like those old, made in the 90s, mm-hmm. reptile keeping handbooks. It's like by some French guy. I can't remember his name. It was like Philippe something. For those who know, I'm sorry. I don't remember where I placed those books years ago. Philippe de Beaujolais. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Had some of those books. Had like the book on leopard geckos, the book on dead geckos, stuff like that. I remember writing it into Reptiles Magazine about asking if it's possible to cohab Madagascar day geckos and green anoles together. And my question got published and it said, no, in fact, you probably shouldn't even keep them within sight lines of each other in the same room. Otherwise, might get stressed out. So.
these are the questions that need to be asked, dude. I mean, who would have thought two different but similar looking green lizards wouldn't like each other? Who would have knew? That's pretty nerdy. That's pretty cool, though, that even back then you were doing stuff like that.
Yeah, and I showed it. I showed it to my parents. My dad said, "Guess what, Nate? Chicks are going to dig you now. You're a published bachelor."
You got it made.
Yeah.
Before long, you'll have a harem of herp loving gals.
Those exist? I'm joking.
They're out there. Kaluberfest, here we come. But that's, like I said, that's pretty nerdy in a good sense. I would say I held on to my my fascination with dinosaurs for quite some time until I hit maybe fifth or sixth grade, and then I started to transition into more more living fauna, you know. And it took me actually quite a while before I actually started doing what colloquially we call, you know, herping, or I guess snake hunting, depends on your wording on that. But it took me until like the later half of high school until I actually started going out to some local parks and just seeing what I could turn up. And then I remember one autumn evening at a local preserve, I was walking the side of the road that transected the preserve, and you know, I saw a dashing garter, and I ran and I grabbed it, and I remember that, like, the first connection I had with like a actual herp, like a snake. I never grabbed the snakes I saw before, and you know, it was actually pretty decent sized mama garter. And I remember it lunged at first at me because, you know, it was terrified, and then as I just kind of played around with it a little bit, calmed down, I was like, oh, this is cool. This is what everybody. I didn't know I could just do this. You know, just have that connection with a little critter. Now, that being said, nowadays I don't grab every snake I see. You know, I'm much more disciplined, but it's still
not fun. Even a grayish colored timber rattlesnake.
Not even a grayish colored rat snake, right?
or rattlesnake for that matter.
Yes. You know, we've had some interesting development in this, on the side of venomous snake handling. In terms of stories, you know, Nate has one and I have one. You know, when it comes to venomous, it tends to be kind of a low light in our hobby, mainly because of the people that do it. That being said, there's plenty of great examples of venomous keepers and handlers, but they're doing it proper, which is, you know, boring for the masses, but good for our hobby.
Yeah. Hey, boring doesn't get you put on a t-shirt, so.
Yeah, especially if you want those t-shirts to be like in a wet t-shirt contest. You're not getting that.
Who knows? I might win one of those, but.
I hope. But no, man, touch on the inland taipan just to bring people up to date.
I was kind of debating bringing up because the guy has been getting flamed pretty thoroughly on social media this past few days. So I don't have all the updates on his medical status and all that. So I'm just going to keep this kind of vague as possible on his personal details. But yeah, basically some Yahoo decided to he's been free handling all sorts of venomous snakes for a long, long time now. Didn't keep any anti-venom because where he lived, there wasn't any venomous rigs, which will probably change here soon, thanks to him. So he didn't have any inland taipan anti-venom, so he decided to free handle his juvenile inland taipan. And not only free handle, he didn't even have it by the tail. He had it like by the middle of the body. And there's videos. He posted the video of not him getting bitten. This was before he got bitten. Of him, like, when his taipan's, like, soaking it or something like that. He has it by the middle of the body and his finger, like, half on the side. It's like, oh, so he's trying to turn on me. But if I put my finger here, I block him from being able to turn on me or something like that. It's like, no. Just watching the video, the snake at the moment didn't want to turn on him as all. So yeah, got tagged by his taipan, and now his whole collection apparently got euthanized because when the police came and seized it all. And also, apparently, his keeping conditions were subpar, to say the least. Won't go into details there because I don't really have any details. But yeah, he was on social media basically begging people to send him Inland Taipan anti-venom. And I know for a certain fact that the Kentucky Reptile Zoo gave a definite no, that they would not give him anti-venom because that would basically wipe out all their stocks of taipan anti-venom, and that would put their staff at risk if one of their staff got tagged. And it takes a while to get restocked on that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you're jeopardizing a place's, I guess, what do you call it, future aid if anything came to happen, just for being reckless with your own animals. And you know, it caused your whole collection, for the most part, from what you're saying, to be, you know, put down, which sucks. You know, just, you know, the animals at the end, they always get the short end of the stick. You know, obviously, hopefully the guy, you know, recovers and whatnot, and like, you know, he's well and good, but you know, he's, you know, a dumbass for being like that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and thing is, if here in Inland Taipan, you think Australian Lapid is a neurotoxin, not necessarily. Brian Fry did a really long post about taipan venom, and it doesn't attack your nervous system. It attacks basically all your systems at once. So it's going to cause muscle damage, it's going to cause cardiac damage, it's going to cause kidney damage, it's going to cause nerve damage. So he has gotten a little bit of anti-venom from what I've heard. But even if he does pull through, you know, fingers crossed, he still has a long road ahead of him in terms of physical therapy. Yeah, he might have to relearn how to walk, of all things. So yeah, basically what I'm saying is, don't be an idiot with venomous snakes. And me personally, I'm not really interested in keeping venomous for at least as far as I can see, the next decade of my life, bare minimum. And where I currently live, you do have to get approved by the state, and you do have to keep your own stocks of anti-venom with you. I know you live in Illinois, so that's probably completely off the board for you, but...
yeah, you're a step above me. You know, I can't even keep anything venomous, yeah. So... But, and, you know, kind of like you, I don't have too high of an interest. I will say, yeah, though, some of the pygmy rattlesnakes, like Cestus and whatnot, they have been itching at me. So I do see myself keeping something in the future, just not at the latest.
But I was gonna say, if I was gonna keep venomous, it'd probably be something like eyelash vipers that are small, not super athletic. The venom isn't that toxic, and the anti-venom isn't super expensive. That's the one downside, in my opinion, of pygmies is you would have to get crow fab, and crow fab is artificially overpriced. So
yeah, it's part of the, you know, big pharma. But what I will say that's nice is, like, with vipers, you know, they kind of fit a lot of our lifestyle. I'm not saying that we're lazy, but I mean, we like snakes for a reason. They're, for the most part, pretty low maintenance critters, and like, vipers kind of take the cake in that regard. They have pretty low metabolisms. They're very sedentary for the most part. And, you know, you just got to set them up right, like, and then just kind of forget about them, in a sense.
Yeah. Well, you could still end up getting bit by yours. I mean, ask Road Trip Monster, but.
Yeah. You know, I saw how he kept posting how his progression of his, what was it, his thumb, right? Or one of his fingers?
Like, one of his fingers, I think. It was like, just like a massive blood blister or something like that.
Yeah, and it was off what, his mottled rock or bandy rock. It was like a Lepidus, wasn't it?
I think it was Lepidus. Well, you can re-listen to my episode with him if you want.
There you go.
For all the listeners out there. That's a good episode. Yeah.
That's a good episode.
But speaking of getting bitten by rattlesnakes, you have a story.
Um
not of you personally, but
okay, okay. I was like, refresh my memory, dude. I didn't know.
It's like I didn't know Crotalus Venom has memory loss effects.
Already started, dude. No, no. You know, this is something I glanced in one of the Facebook communities, but you know, same with you. I'll just touch on it a little bit. This older woman, I forgot what state. I think either maybe Tennessee or Georgia, somewhere down south. She posted on a snake ID group, you know, she found and grabbed this gray rat snake that was by her porch. And looking at the photos, it was a grayish snake, but it wasn't a gray rat snake. It was a very young timber rattlesnake. And you know, and I don't mean to laugh, but like in her description, she said, and I squeezed him gently and he let me know he didn't like that. And then in one of the photos, I see two little blood prick marks where the rattler got her. So it did bite her. And then obviously she had the edit like update portion in her post it currently and the ER receiving anti-venom. So, you know, thankfully she was pretty quick on the trot to take care of that. But it just goes to show, you know, you don't grab snakes. You aren't 100% certain on the ID. And, you know,
yeah.
I even talked with Nate earlier. I was like, you know, if she didn't even squeeze that snake, she probably would have got lucky and probably not even got bit. Because from what her account says, she only got bit once. It's, you know, it really only happened when she like applied like pressure on the snake. But I mean, she grabbed it and it didn't do anything. So it shows you, you know, rattlesnakes or venomous critters in general aren't out to get you if they don't feel immediately threatened.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been quite a week for reptile people on the internet, to say the least. And yeah, I'm not even going to touch that Amazon puffing snake I got released down to the wild. So,
oh, I don't even know about this. You have to tell me about this later.
Yeah, I'm not even going to bother that. People were making fun of this person for it for like a few days, and then all of a sudden everything else happened. So she had a rough few days, but fortunately the internet always finds a new victim. So
they do. And you know, the snake ID groups are great for finding stories. I mean, just recently I saw in a Mississippi snake ID group, apparently there was like a release boa kind of down in like Biloxi area, like kind of close to the Gulf. But yeah, you know, people are still out releasing snakes. That never changes too.
Well,
it's so silly.
You say you have a small collection at the moment. What all do you keep at the moment?
Dude, no, I wouldn't even call it a collection. I just legitimately have one herp.
We all start somewhere.
Yeah, we do. Oh, I mean, we have a family heirloom, a Russian tortoise I had since I was five. I do say heirloom because who knows how long that little bugger's going to last. Probably forever. And then, and, you know, 7 years ago, I got myself an Indonesian blue tongue, Quincy. You know, I've had her, like I said, 7 years, so quite some time. They can live pretty long too.
Yeah.
But with this upcoming Colubrid Fest, I am tempted and probably will finally dip my toes into actually keeping and maintaining a snake or two.
Anything in particular?
Well, I hinted at it and I told you I might be going Pituophis or European Pituophis, which is the ladder snakes. I forget the scientific name. I think it's amensis or something like that. But yeah, if you guys look it up, ladder snake, they're really cool. I mean, they basically are the European equivalent of a pit, even in their diet and whatnot. You know, they mostly eat mammals.
Okay. You know. I was going to ask if you were interested in any Lampropeltis or not.
I do like lamps, and you know, we haven't talked on our social media accounts, but you know, I have an Instagram account that's pretty successful. And then when I go out herping, probably the most common herp I'll find are lamps, since I actually have sites for them to go to. So milk snakes are probably the most common pets I have, my bad. But I don't know. No, I don't think lamps as keeping ones. The only one that actually does interest me would be a prairie king, a caligaster. I do like prairie king snakes.
Okay. Because I was going to say, I'm actually going to be picking up some Hernando County Florida Kings from Zach Loffin when I go there to Kluberfest.
Yes, I know he's a lampro nut as well. And you know, some of the Florida County ones, I will admit, are gorgeous. I don't know anything about locality, so like, describe it. What's the coloration going to be like?
I had to look up his description again. I was just kind of interested in getting some Florida Kings, and he just listed them all off. I said some, and he's like, okay, cool. Goes back to a bit later. He's like, oh, this clutch crashed. But I have plenty of Hernando County. It's hatching. You could have those, right? It's like, okay. So.
Next best thing, man. Yeah.
And they're less expensive, so.
Even better. That's awesome, dude. Oh, I guess you remember, you know about the Apalachicola king snakes, like they're blotched looking. And how they were once considered a subspecies. I don't know if they still were. Dr. Bruce Means, he's an old timer, but he's the one that discovered the population. And then I guess through over collecting, the phenotype has nearly become extinct. But they're a really cool king snake too, just for the pattern. Because I mean, they're a Florida king snake, but they're blotched. They're not like the Brooks or like any other locality.
Yeah.
You know, so man, if we start talking about, you know, king snakes or anything, like I will get hyped up. I will get into it. Like I'm a fan of
caligasters.
Very, they're very variable. In Illinois, the phenotypes are okay. I would say the Texas caligasters are really cool with their variability. Anyway, I mean, they're brown snakes, brown or gray snakes at the end of it, but the accents that they can have and whatnot, you know, it does come up my fancy.
And at the end of the day, brown dirt snakes is Phil Wolf's cup of tea. So,
yeah, they are, aren't they? Even though he likes the dangerous brown snakes,
but he doesn't free handle. So, bonus points to him.
He's doing it right.
Yeah. So, I mean, you and I have been talking about doing another like short weekend trip to like say Snake Road in October, maybe. But do you have any other big herp trips planned out?
And then in terms of like kind of quote unquote big trips, because you know going down to Southern Illinois for me, it's a little bit of a pilgrimage. It's about 4.5 hours, and then obviously for you, it's like probably 7 or a little bit longer. But I always try to make it out there once or twice for the spring and fall migration. That's the main big thing I have upcoming. I was in Missouri a couple days ago just to do a little bit of herping and some glade settings, and it was pretty fruitful. I missed out on catching a glass lizard and even a tantilla. I lost that through leaf litter, but you know, I did come up with 2 rough green snakes, which is a very quality find for the area. I even made a video out of it, so I'll have that coming up probably in the next week or so. But it was cool.
Yeah. Well, we should probably talk about this off air, but you're also thinking maybe doing a little South Texas at the end of the year?
Who knows, man? We can always talk about delusions of grandeur, but when it comes to logistics, I don't know. I would actually would like to go out of country again for the winter, but South Texas is as good as it'll get as well, you know, for wintertime herping. When we're, you know, we'll probably be covered in snow or just cold weather.
Yeah. But funny story, my old high school biology teacher once told me is he has a couple dozen acres of woodland, And he was just hiking around in it one day and in January. And I don't know where you're at in Illinois if you have this, but here in Ohio, occasionally, like maybe once every other year or so, we'll have a random day in January that'll get all the way up to 60 or something like that. And he's just walking around his woods in January at 60 degrees, and he sees a garter snake of all things out basking. So,
dude, I mean, that's how nature scenes are. It's like when it comes to like winter herps, it's like nature scenes, turtles. I mean, that's about it. And you know, and salamanders, of course. But that's
even then, they're not really. Account. Even then, they're not really winter. They're more like very early spring, if in my book, but. They're like the first herps that come out, it seems like.
Salamanders?
Well, turtles and nature scenes as well.
Yeah, just that collection of herps are like the first ones that are like, you know, the harbingers of like, okay, good times hopefully are coming. And then it freezes over and then they all die. I know. That's happened before in the spring where, you know, it looks like temps are getting nice and like the frogs are coming out to the vernal pools. And the turtles and whatnot, and then we get like a cold snap, and then massive die off, just because you know the herps, you know, they just couldn't retreat quickly enough. Last year, with a buddy of mine, Johnny, and his wife, we were up in the Chicagoland area, just checking out some preserves, trying to get our lifer blue spotted. Well, it would have been my lifer blue spotted. They had found some in Michigan, but we did manage to turn up just one. So that was cool. And even that one might be dubious because up there, there's also a population of unisexuals. So I'm not too sure.
I have those around where I'm at, so.
Cool. So yeah, that makes it very complicated. But anyway, I'm going to say it was a blue spotted. That was a cool find. And then later on, Johnny shouted, he's like, snake. And I was like, what? And like, this is like December. This is 2 days before Christmas. And it was like in the 50s, so like not terribly cold, but you know, cold for a snake. And it was a little garter snake, a young one, just cruising along.
Yeah, I remember once for Thanksgiving, at my grandmother's place up on the hill. It was a sunny day, late fall day, and there was a garter snake. So they're like the one random snake that is like. Whenever it gets about 50 degrees outside, I'm going to come up and I'm going to bask and as much as I can, it seems like.
Oh, I'll never get tired of them. Even though they're pretty ubiquitous in the Midwest, I'll never get tired of them. They're pretty reliable snakes.
Yeah. I was fortunate enough to find two other phenotypes out west this spring as well. So.
Yeah, you had yourself a little Cali trip where you found some herps.
A few, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, in terms of me with herping trips, this is my first time telling this on air, but I'm actually going to Costa Rica first week of November. So,
ooh, dude, that's so exciting. You're out there for like what, a couple of days?
The 2nd through the 8th. So, almost a week. Better part of a week. Yeah.
Man, yeah, man. In the Neotropics. Forget about it.
Yeah. So it's from what I know, it's a couple of herpers that started up their own little tour guide company. They're leading this. So I already have everything paid for. So basically, everything's already paid for, tickets, the room board, all that stuff. So basically, it's going to be kind of a budget trip, actually. So basically, I have to take enough cash to. You know, buy some street food and some dewormer from the street food. So,
No, dude. The people will treat you right. You know, my heritage is in Panama, and like, just you know, Central American food in general is very delicious. You'll probably get no upset stomach. Yeah, it's gonna be wicked, dude. That is sweet. That could be another talking point we could touch on maybe on a future ep on like a. How there's more herp-centric tour companies, not just starting up, but you know there's a more number of them out there, which is really cool to have that kind of service to like the, I guess not the less initiated, but you know I mean you're starting from zero once you're out of your comfort zone, out of your country even to to herp around, you know. So you're definitely going to find a lot, you know. That'd be pretty wicked.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm hoping to finally check off a species of Crotalus that isn't a subspecies of Origanus, finally. That's for some reason, that's the only croat I've ever seen to find is some form of Origanus when I'm out west.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a whole taxonomic nightmare wastebasket. But, you know, down south, I think Dorysus was the wastebasket. You know, Dorysus was everything, like Dorysus subspecies.
Yeah, I was just reading up about that. So I was just reading up about that for the neotropical rattlers.
Yeah, I haven't kept on it at all. So would that be Dorysus then, the neotropical rattlesnake?
Your,
the main one.
I'm trying to remember, in Costa Rica, I think there's two, one in the northern part, which is now considered like maybe like Central American or Mexican, which I had to look that up. And then in the southern part of Costa Rica is Dorysus, I believe, which goes all the way down to South America.
Okay, so I think it might be Dorysus and then Simus, but you know, I don't know.
That sounds right, yeah, Simus, yeah.
Something like that. But yeah, very cool.
I really need to read up on Mexican rattlesnakes, because apparently they have more species than the United States does, and that's a whole list of lifers to check off there. So,
oh, dude, you know, Mexico and such wild countries, man, wild countries to go herping. There is a good book for Costa Rica herps. It's a field guide. It's on Amazon. I forgot who the author is. I think Julie something. I could be wrong, but it's pretty cheap. I would say maybe look into that. But piggybacking off of, you know, you going to California, there's going to be a revised Amphibians and Reptiles of California book coming out next year.
Okay. And I just spent like $80 on that copy of that book for my brother who lives out there. So,
I mean, that's still a good book. It still holds up, right? It's still good. But yeah, it's going to be a new one coming out next year.
And he's not a reptile guy, so he doesn't really need to know what the latest subspecies of Thamnophis is. So,
no, you just got to match the snake to the picture. That's really all it is sometimes.
Basically, all he has to look up and say, okay, is this a rattlesnake or not? Okay,
thank you much. Yes. No, so. That's pretty cool.
Man. So, where are like your top 3 to 5 places they want to go herping someday?
Very tough questions. I would say it's still at the top of my list would be Australia. Australia has always been there. It's just obviously budget wise, it's a little bit outside the budget. So that's always been on the back burner. But you know, here in the Western Hemisphere, especially down south, that's really been keeping me at bay, going to Mexico. I would love to spend a whole year, if I could, in Mexico, just herping. So Mexico will still be there. Or I guess not, because you're saying what countries I would want to go. So I've already been to Mexico, I guess.
Well, you could include countries you've been to as well, I guess.
Nah,
and also,
also
maybe habitats as well, instead of just countries.
Ooh. Well, then that'll be a whole nother episode, dude. But I would just keep it
okay,
short
we'll save
and sweet.
That. I'll write that down.
Keep it noted. Yeah, I would say, yeah, Australia and then Brazil. Brazil would love to go to. So big and diverse. And then probably Argentina. Either Argentina or Malaysia.
Paraguay?
No, Argentina or Malaysia.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, Malaysia has some pretty cool stuff, and technically you could get both the mainland and the Indonesian islands with that, so.
Yeah, and like crocodilian-wise, because I know we're big croc nuts, Temistema. I mean, you cannot go wrong with Temistema. Those are probably my favorite crocodilians, hands down, because they're so weird and unique, and like, you know, there's nothing like them, you know? Apparently, listening from like the guests you've had on and just doing my own research, is that I think they radiated from Europe originally when things were warmer, so they were like a European lineage, and now we only have them in just a small remote corner of Indonesia.
Yeah, it wasn't that far long ago that they were more diverse, so
Yeah, they're in Australia, they're in Europe. I mean, just
Solomon Islands. Was that? Yeah, I think that was Solomon Islands that had a Tomissima species.
Mm-hmm.
But
and like even the present day species, we know little about. There's like almost nothing on them. You barely see them like in the media. I do quite a bit of searching, and like the best thing I can do is like sometimes I'll see random Facebook video pop-ups in like a different language, I guess in Indonesian language, and it's like either like a dead or a captured Tomissima, and I'm like, these things get big. People don't know. They get like 4 or 5 meters.
Yeah. But again, a crocodile encounter. Go see the collection they have there.
Was that recent that he got some Tomissima? Because I don't remember he ever had.
He's had them for a while.
Yes.
He's had them since before I first went there. I first went there back in 2019. So it's at least half a decade at this point. So, but yeah, that's why August 5th is such an important day. That's World Tomissima Day. So,
Book it. Yeah. St. Louis Zoo, they have one adult. I forget. I think it's a female. They've had that one for a while, but like I said, it's just a one-off, so they're not really doing nothing in terms of conservation practice. But, you know, they're not highlighted enough. Like, I didn't even know Croc Encounters had them. I knew he had, like, some young ones, but I didn't know he had, you know, other specimens.
Yeah, it's like, I think his whole collection is up to 6 now, and they're starting to get big, so.
Yeah, but they're cool, man.
But hey, if you want to talk to Dieter, I can see if we get him on sometime.
Oh, dude, it'd be awesome to talk to him. Yeah, to talk to him, just go there. It's in Beaumont, right? It's his property in Beaumont.
No, it's or in Angleton. That's yeah, so Angleton. It's like two and a half hours west of Beaumont.
Yeah,
Beaumont's where my other Gator Park experience is at. So.
Well, you know what, dude? You know, we could talk about this off air. I'm also down for like a extended weekend yeah. Getaway, you know?
Which I might have something to tell you after we get off air about that, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, shucks, man. You know, we did pretty good. We got a little intro about ourselves. We did our rambling. I mean, you know, I'm down for a couple other talking points unless if you had anything else to bring up, you know?
I don't have anything at the moment to bring up. So, well, anything at the moment to bring up on air. So,
no, but I mean, yeah, this was good, man. Good little, I guess, introductory episode. And I'm excited to see what we can do. You know, obviously, I don't think it's going to be a very consistent type of podcast, like a bi-monthly. I think that's kind of what you were aiming with, something like that, maybe.
Yeah.
Once, twice a month, however our schedules align, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, see how frequently we can do this. And I'll probably try and get a little better organized on writing down ideas for the episodes. So,
oh, man. Or this maybe, is the first episode, bro. This is good. This is really good.
Or maybe if we just have time, just get on the air and shoot the shit. Just have some fun.
Yeah, man, I love that. And, like, it's going to be cool, man, to see you in person in a couple weeks. You know, I'm so excited. Like, I need to get my shit together if I'm really going to actually want to buy a critter. You know,
yeah.
One of my favorite people are the Zirkles, you know, since they deal with, like, you know, colubrids of all sorts of manners. And I personally am a colubrid guy myself. I love my boas and pythons. They were actually the first snakes for me to really get into it, just because they're like the most common snakes you see in documentaries or in like Naked and Afraid B-roll cuts. But
that's a show I will never understand. Well, I guess I can understand why it got popular. It's like, oh, we get to see fit people naked except for some blurry spots.
So. Well, it was like Survivor, but like on dial 10, you know?
It's like Survivor, but with a very distinct drum beat intro. All right.
And let's close. But yeah, take it away.
Yeah, so Hope you guys like this. A little new idea that's been kind of bouncing around my head for a little bit. Hope you guys enjoy it. Hope you guys enjoy my choice of co-host. Hope so.
Yeah, lots riding on this, folks. We're either shipping it to the ground or we're staying afloat.
The fate of our democracy relies on you liking and subscribing and sharing this.
All right. Make reptiles great again, okay?
Mara. All right. Well, see you folks around. Bye.
All right, bye. Bye-bye, guys. Mm-hmm.